Welcome into a Tuesday morning edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. We are previewing Nets Cavs and then just getting into some scattered thoughts on the NBA going across the entire league. We are not limited by our name today. We are going into it next on Locked On Nets. You are Locked On Nets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, Gavin Shaw. After 4 years covering the Phoenix Suns, I moved back to my native New York to cover your daily Brooklyn Nets micropod, and I'm joined by Josh Bass. He was, in his own words, fertilized ready. I love it.
Gavin, I think I stole that from one of our friends. I forget who said that at one point, but it's always been a great...
Seems like a Leoism.
It's not a Leoism. It's a great knockoff nickname for Lance Stevens, and sure. I've applied it to my own life.
I wonder, I think someone should bring that up to him, and I wonder if he'd, like, switch it and, like, maybe like, legally change his name to it, a la, like, Ron Artest and Meta World Peace.
It's possible.
The Pacers.
I mean, listen.
Yeah.
It's all about those ex-Pacers going to L.A. and then doing something crazy, right?
I was
going to
say, the Pacers do have, like, a proud history of, like, lunatics, and I'm wondering just when Domantas Sabonis is going to go bad. All right, let's get into it. We're rolling through today. This is going to be a relatively short one, though I always say that, and it ends up being 25, 30 minutes, so maybe I'm wrong. Nets-Cavs, they play on Wednesday. Nets get a rare three-day break in the NBA season. I'm not sure if they have another one all year. It doesn't seem exceptionally likely. But this is a good time to rest, recuperate, and turn things around, because obviously it was a little disheartening, particularly the effort defensively, what we saw against Indiana, but Cleveland is really a prime opportunity for the Nets to build some momentum and get things moving in the right direction.
Yep, Cleveland's a team that still does not have a win this year. Obviously, they lost a certain someone in the offseason, referring to the great Jeff Green, of course. And also, I think someone else might have went to the Lakers, but correct me if I'm wrong there.
Yeah, they lost LeBron. LeBron went to the Lakers. LeBron, friend of Harry Potter, is gone. Yeah. All right. So tough loss for Cleveland. They've been terrible. I do want to say, I think just how bad Cleveland is. Like, they just gave up a 35-11 game to our guy Trae Young, who I think is going to be very good down the road. He should not be getting 35-11 just yet in an NBA game. I think that's really a testament to just how great LeBron is. Like, obviously, they kind of got lucky last year in their Eastern Conference Finals run. They avoided Boston at their peak, missing their two best players. But that, I think that should always be commended as incredible. And the fact that, like, LeBron put together a performance good enough to theoretically have won a game against a historically great team in the Warriors with that group of misfits, like, to me, that's almost more impressive than any of his championships.
Yeah, their roster right now is pretty desolate. Obviously have Kevin Love, but he is not what he was when he came over from Minnesota. And he's really struggled the last couple of years, especially with his efficiency. Big key in this game will be keeping them off the glass. Love is still a pretty good offensive rebounder. And obviously they have Tristan Thompson, whose main value add area is going to be on the glass. Chetty Osmond's a sneaky, decent offensive rebounder as well. So making sure that the Nets put bodies on guys. I'm assuming Rondae Hollis-Jefferson is going to be back for this game. First game of the season for him. I'm interested to see how many minutes he's going to play. Doubt it will be more than 25, but definitely the Nets will need all hands on deck to make sure they're not getting out-rebounded and making sure that they're not giving Cleveland any second-chance opportunities.
Yeah, I'm pretty dubious of it in general, but I'm interested to see if he shoots any threes, because in terms of his long-term fit in Brooklyn, and obviously he could potentially be a free agent after this season, that I think is really the big question in terms of how long can he fit here. And I think Kenny Atkinson will always be able to find a spot for him, just because you always need big guys who are versatile, can defend. And last year he obviously showed that ability to create his own offense that was previously absent. But I think in terms of determining whether he's a long-term starter in Brooklyn, like, he's going to need to turn into, like, I think at worst, a 35% three-point shooter, and I don't know if he necessarily has that within him, or just becomes so great at all the other stuff, you can't keep him off the floor. So I'm wondering what direction that tilts in, and obviously it's just one game, so we won't have a great indication of that, but that's really fascinating to me.
Yeah, I think it's going to be, it'll be interesting, because obviously one way for Rondae is to improve his three-point shot, but he also would have a fit on this team if Jared Allen really develops that consistent three-pointer. And that's a way for those two to play together. as well. So I think it'll be interesting to see how Rondé's skill development happens and maybe if other guys on the team take leaps to the point where it'd be more palatable to play Rondé with them. And an update here from Brian Fonseca of the of Nets Daily, a bunch of different stuff. He says Rondé Hollis-Jefferson will play, and also Shabazz Napier will be in the lineup as well. So the Nets get a little bit healthy. Kurek's unlikely to play, and Travion Graham will be out for a while. So net-net in terms of how many players they'll have available.
Yeah, I was going to ask who falls out of the rotation, and I guess that pretty much answers it. And I think we both kind of agreed after these last couple of games, like Kurucs has done enough to earn himself a permanent spot in this rotation. And I'm wondering what the answer to that is when Damari Carroll comes back, because at that point you're looking at playing 10, 11 guys, which even for Kenny Atkinson seems extreme. Maybe he pulls it off. But I'm wondering, like, who out of that group falls out. Maybe the answer is Kurucs and there's just not a spot for him, but he almost did too many good things to say that and make it that simple.
Yeah, I think I would assume Dudley comes out of the lineup because I think Kurucs does a good job also of being that stretch four. We've seen him knock down threes early in the season, so he can play that role. I would assume Dudley would be marginalized at that point. Maybe they even look to see if there's a team out there that's willing to take him on as just a veteran locker room presence. And also, who knows what shakes out with Rondé Hollis-Jefferson and Damari Carroll. Maybe one of those guys gets traded. So I think it's too early in the season to tell. But I definitely agree with you. Kurucs has played his way into the rotation, and he's a guy that when he does get back healthy, hopefully that's not Wednesday, but the game after, he's going to need playing time.
Right, and that kind of sorts out the bigs. I'm also interested in terms of what happens with the guards, because I think what we assumed in the preseason was that maybe you just see, with Napier healthy, you'd see a little bit more of the Dinwiddie-Russell lineups, and then Napier could maybe play more along LeVert, but at this point, you're not going to be cutting LeVert's minutes because he's just so obviously Brooklyn's best player. So I'm wondering what the solution is there and how they mix that up, and maybe it's as simple as cutting D'Lo's minutes because he's not playing that well.
Yeah, it could be cutting D'Lo's minutes, but I think what we have to realize is that even though Napier did have a good season last year for Portland and showed he's a solid backup, he really does. He has such a small contract. I mean, it's, what is it, 2 years, $4 million, yeah. And only this year is guaranteed. So it's, they don't necessarily, there's no impetus for him being a huge part of the future if he doesn't play well. So I could see, let's say, 8 or 10 games into the year, Napier's struggling, hasn't really found his footing yet. I think they'd be fine kind of moving him to the bench for a little bit and saying, let's roll with D'Lo, Dinwiddie, and LeVert as kind of a three-headed dragon playing the one and two for those 96 minutes a game. And then maybe Napier has an opportunity to get back in the rotation via an injury, but I don't think they'll be fine just cutting the cord on him and saying, hey, if you're not getting off to a good start, we don't have any reason to make sure you get playing time.
Right, and I guess my only counter to that is, even though he's obviously not as talented as any of those three other guys, he's such a good fit with all of them because he doesn't dominate the ball in the same way. Like, I wouldn't mind seeing him play next to LeVert, so LeVert could be on the ball even more than he already is. I think he's a really good fit next to Dinwiddie. I think he's a really good fit next to D'Lo because all those guys are big enough to kind of compensate for him defensively, and then offensively, he proved very comfortable last year as a secondary or tertiary ball handler and just a spot-up shooter with his ability to hit threes at a really consistent rate. So I just like the idea of having him out there with these guys. Like, I think, let's just hypothetically, like, him and Dinwiddie could maybe be a better look than D'Lo and Dinwiddie, even if D'Lo's a better player in a vacuum.
Yes, I see what you're saying. I think that, I mean, I like Napier. I think he's a good fit. It was a great signing for the price they paid for him. I just don't think he's any sort of sure thing. Anyone who's really going to wow you and lead to a tangible amount of wins over replacement. And also, he's 27. So I don't think there's a lot left to see here. He's going to be a solid backup for you, but he's not someone that's really going to bring any sort of wow factor. So I wouldn't want him getting in the way of more high potential players like the other three guards the Nets have.
All right, that's a good way to wrap up our opening segment. When we come back, we'll give you some scattered thoughts across the NBA. That next on Locked On Nets. You are Locked On Nets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Shout out to our new listeners. We love our new listeners. If you're new or if you're old, I just wanted to encourage you to rate and review the podcast. And if you're not subscribed, please do that as well. I know it's annoying. I hear podcasters say it all the time. I almost never, ever do it, but there are like a few podcasts that I just like genuinely love. Like for me, the Play-by-Play podcast by Joel Godet is excellent. One you're a lot more likely to listen to, and you might know, Binge Mode by the Ringer folks, Jason and Mallory. Big time shout out to them. Those podcasts are so good. I just say, you know what? I'm going to bite the bullet. I'm going to go review them. And I haven't done it yet, but I will do it. So I'd like everyone listening to maybe put it off a little bit, like get done what you really have to get done first, but then get back to it and review our show. We really appreciate it. Peak ticket season in New York is fast approaching, and we know that you want to be a part of it. The NFL is in full swing. The Yankees are getting ready for a playoff run, and hockey and basketball are just around the corner. And there's no better option to get a great deal on attending any of those events than Vivid Seats. Vivid Seats allows you to sort by price or look for seats in the section and row of your choice. To make things even better, Vivid Seats is giving listeners an exclusive promo code for $20 off orders of $200 or more to save you even more money. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Then use promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off orders of $200 or more. Every purchase is backed by a 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater and more, Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app and enter promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off orders of $200 or more. That's LOCKEDON. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let Vivid Seats help you get to your favorite live event. All right, Josh, let's get into it. Some scattered thoughts across the league. The first one you brought up, and I think we mentioned it a little bit on the last show when we thought the Nets like seemingly had a good offensive game. They scored 112 points and they still lost by 20. And that's really the theme across the league. The Pelicans had a 149-125 win over the Kings the other day. And I could just keep going through this again and again and again. The freedom of movement rules have really opened things up offensively. And that combined with the fact teams are playing at a faster pace and then any time since maybe the late 80s, early 90s in the NBA, it's really crazy. It feels like we're watching almost a different league.
Yep, definitely. I think it's, just the loosening of the rules, as you mentioned. And also, teams are continuously going smaller and favoring more shooting as opposed to someone that could clog the lane and be that more defensive presence. So as teams continue to go smaller, obviously we see these unicorns pop up, guys who can really defend on the perimeter and also protect the rim inside. But those guys are few and far between. Most of these teams are playing guys like Jared Dudley, who are super one-dimensional, and the primary value they're bringing is that spacing on offense. So I think we're going to continue to see points go up. I don't know if it's going to be at the rate we're seeing right now. Obviously, just looking around the league, Orlando and Boston played a game tonight that was 93-90. I think we're going to see scoring depress a little bit, but it's probably going to continue to be a record high compared to past seasons.
It's interesting. I think I'm pretty sure Steph Curry made this point, but I can't quite remember. And he was saying, like, in general, like in his time in the NBA, offenses usually get better as the season goes on. And you just think like this current trend is just unsustainable because it just seems like such an anomaly compared to the last 5-6 years of NBA basketball. But there are these sustainable sources to it. So I'm wondering if it will go down. And I think it'll drop off a little bit. But I don't know. I could see this really continuing throughout the year. And maybe we're operating in a different paradigm in the NBA. And it'll be interesting to see how that changes the league going forward. And maybe we should take a second and think about it from a Nets perspective. Because obviously, Brooklyn was a little bit ahead of this curve the last couple of years, taking as many threes as any team in the NBA, not named the Houston Rockets. And I'm wondering if other teams kind of shifting to this trend with better talent than the Nets have actually hurts Brooklyn, at least in a short-term stretch until Brooklyn can get that talent to match up with them, is maybe they're losing one of their key edges.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think it does hurt the Nets because, listen, we said it all the time last year, the Nets shot a lot of threes to kind of...
even the playing field.
Yeah, even the playing field, lessen that talent gap and try to create more variance. And if other teams are doing the same strategies as the Nets, just better, then it's not going to lead to as many wins. I think the Nets have improved their talent pool over the last 2 years significantly to the point where you can look at their roster and be like, okay, like for the most part, 80% of these guys should be on an NBA team. But it's not a great thing, especially as star players become more and more important and the Nets don't have many, as we know. We'll see what happens. But I think, yeah, the trend of teams kind of getting smarter, using analytics more, is going to hurt the Nets, who definitely had a big edge in that when Sean Marks first took over.
Right, and it'll be interesting to see how Brooklyn kind of adapts to that over time. To quote Kenny Atkinson forever and always, create variance. He just screams it. We should really sell create variance t-shirts. I'm gonna look into that. All right. First note from, I guess, on a team-specific perspective, the Denver Nuggets are really, really good. They beat the Golden State Warriors by 1 point, despite, I think, shooting close to 50% from the free throw line the other night. They did, unfortunately, lose Will Barton for a couple of weeks with a groin injury. But I just love the way that team is playing. Josh, you know better than anyone else. You have Nikola Jokic on your fantasy team. He's been absolutely amazing. I think he had a perfect shooting night against DeAndre Ayton with a triple-double. And all the surrounding talent is so complimentary. And then you mix in guys like Barton, Isaiah Thomas, if he potentially gets healthy, Michael Porter Jr., if he's healthy later in the season. And they're just one of the deepest teams in recent NBA memory. Like, every guy on the roster is good. They're just like a much better version of the Nets, actually, in that respect.
Yeah, no, I've kept Jokic on my fantasy team 2 years in a row because the guy is just a stud. But I think the big thing for them will be Paul Millsap. Can he get back to the level he was in Atlanta? Obviously very plagued with the injuries last year, especially his shoulder. He's not getting any younger. I mean, the guy's been in the league forever. He's an undersized power forward. So I don't know if he's ever going to get back to that all-star form and if he'll be able to live up to the contract that he signed with the Nuggets. But they do have a couple of really good backup forwards. Juancho Hernan Gomez is a really good young player and has probably one of my favorite names in the entire league. And then Trey Lyles, name not as good, but equally as effective, probably even better. He's been a great stretch four since coming over from Utah. So again, a lot of depth. Gary Harris and Jamal Murray are super underrated as a wing combo. And Denver is a great team. I mean, it's really going to be, can they mask some of Jokic's defensive flaws? And if they can, this team could easily make the second round of the playoffs and maybe even have an upset to get to the conference finals.
And the really crazy thing right now is they were, for long stretches, particularly with Jokic on the floor, either the worst or one of the two or three worst defensive teams in all of basketball last season. Right now, and again, through three games, small sample size theater, keep that in mind, they are allowing 96 points per game. There is only one team in the NBA, the Boston Celtics, allowing under 100. There is only one other team allowing under 104 so far in the NBA, and there are a bunch of teams allowing over 115. So that is just crazy. Yeah, I don't know if that's sustainable, but it's that could make them really, really great.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of that comes down to really what Denver is doing in terms of the lineup construction, because they have Nikola Jokic, who they know is excellent at spacing the floor, is a big-time playmaker. And they surround him with guys who can really shoot, and Jamal Murray and Gary Harris. And Millsap's a good playmaker as well. So that being said, they realize they don't need to have that traditional point guard in there. I mean, last year it was a kind of a plug-and-play with guys like Emmanuel Mudiay for a little bit of the season, Devin Harris as well. And now they're just playing Torrey Craig, who's more of a defensive-minded wing, alongside Murray, Harris, Millsap, and Jokic. And they have enough playmaking and shooting between the five of them that they have the luxury of having Craig, who's a very hard-nosed defender, in there with that unit. So nice job by Mike Malone adapting on that front.
I can testify as a Knicks fan, one of the greatest upgrades a team can have is going from employing Emmanuel Mudiay to not employing Emmanuel Mudiay, and Denver accomplished that this past offseason. All right, we'll wrap up segment number two, come back, and we'll go rapid fire on a few more thoughts around the league. Is your company looking for a new way to reach customers? Your company could be mentioned right now. Podcast listeners are 60% more likely to interact with sponsors they hear on their podcasts. Our demographic is 98% male and more educated and earning more than traditional media audiences. Have your company sponsor this podcast? Email me at gavinshall14@gmail.com. That is gavinshall14@gmail.com. You know, ever since I started this podcast, people have been asking me for advice. Usually it's, which team should I bet on this week? The truth is, I don't know who's going to win. But if you think you do, you gotta check out my bookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. That's why I always tell people to bet with my bookie. Trust me, they are the best bet you'll make this season. They've been in business for years, have great online reviews, and their mobile site is super easy to use. So you can lay down some cash and win today. They have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business, And for you fantasy guys out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. My fantasy teams are excellent this season. I don't have to do that. Yours? Probably not as good, so I'd recommend getting on MyBookie and doing that immediately. Plus, if you join now, MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar up to $1,000. All you have to do is use my promo code LOCKEDON25 to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use my promo code with a capital L, LOCKEDON25, when creating your account to claim the bonus. You play, you win, you get paid. All right, third and final segment. In the commercial break, we decided we're going to come up with a name for it at some point, but that will not be today. You can tweet us suggestions. I'm looking at you, Yves Darboux, and Fucci.
Yves.
Fucci? It's Fucci, right? Fucci? All right, call us Fucci.
Yeah, Fucci's good.
Call us Fucci. All right. Yeah, no, Fucci, I think, genuinely loves us. Shout out to Fucci. And you know what? If you want to get shouted out on the podcast, interact with us on Twitter anymore, because we have three people who are really, really good about it. But I get like this occasional like tidbits from other people.
We love getting tagged in your stuff.
Yeah, we really do. Even if you want to just like attack us, like please do it. We just really want to engage with you guys. Twitter's at LockedOnNets. If you want to tweet at us. All right. Quick scattered thoughts around the NBA. Josh's 10 to 15 second thoughts on each of these things. Yeah, I love the Bucks this year. They're playing the right way, and it was one of those incredible things where you just go from one of the worst coaches in the league in Jason Kidd to one of the best in Mike Budenholzer. I saw KOC make the comparison of Mark Jackson to Steve Kerr, and I don't know if Milwaukee quite has that ceiling yet, but you know what? You throw one more Kevin Durant-level superstar in here, and we can start talking about it. They're playing exactly the right way. They're doing everything they possibly can to maximize Giannis. Essentially, everyone else in their rotation is a shooter or some kind of floor spacer, and it's been thrilling to watch.
Yep. Really like what Milwaukee's done this year. Obviously, having our boy Brook Lopez in the lineup has been great. He had a nice game against the Bucks tonight because he's really he's not a great rebounder. We know that. I watched him for nearly 10 years as a net. I know for a fact that he's not a great rebounder, and people love to criticize that, but he is really good at a couple things. One, that's scoring off of switches, hitting the outside three, and also being a solid rim protector when he's in position. So when you have a team that's as active defensively as the Bucks are, with Giannis, Chris Middleton, Brogdon, Bledsoe, just so much length on the court, even DiVincenzo, they have the athletes to cover for Brook Lopez, and I think that makes it a really good fit. And he's such a huge offensive upgrade over Henson. I think they're going to have a really big year.
All right, two games in, so I'm not freaking out about it yet. But I just wanted to throw this out there, and like, it shouldn't be a hot take given how old he is, but just given how like freakish he's been, I'm just going to say this. I don't think we will ever see LeBron be as good again as he was last season. And he's put up fine stats in the first two games, obviously adjusting to a new team. There are a million reasons why he would not be at the all-time high that he was on a Cleveland team that was literally built for him to succeed on an individual level as best as he could. But I don't know. To me, he just looks maybe like a half step slower. I just have this feeling in my gut. We saw the best of LeBron offensively last year, and it's never going to be quite the same again. And that's not saying he won't be the best player in the NBA because that gap was just so wide. But I don't know if he quite reaches that height again.
Yeah, I don't want to overreact to a couple games. I think we always see this with LeBron when he goes to a new team. There's a learning period, more about finding, learning about his teammates' tendencies, where they like to go on the court, how they like the ball passed to them. So I'm not going to rule that out until we're at least into 2019 and seeing what LeBron has done when he's been more acclimated to these young guys that the Lakers surround him with.
All right, let's talk about the Slovenian LeBron, Luka Doncic, making a compelling case why he should be the number one pick. Obviously, DeAndre Ayton has only played two games so far. He's been pretty good as well, especially in that first one. You could argue he outplayed Ayton. But I watched that whole Suns game, and even though Ayton didn't shoot well, his ability to manipulate a defense with ball fakes is just incredible. I've never seen a rookie, probably outside of LeBron, who's as good as doing that and just as smart as he is coming into the NBA as genuinely a teenager. And obviously, he has that international experience. He's played at the highest level. He's been an MVP at the highest possible level outside of the NBA. But I'm shocked at how good he is. And I'm shocked at how efficiently he's scoring the basketball. Obviously, excellent in the Mavericks' second game. 5 of 10, 3 of 6 from the field tonight. That could come and go. But he surpassed my wildest expectations for him.
Is he? I mean, I feel like, listen, I like Doncic, and I think he's going to be great, but his first couple games, I mean, I don't think it's anything special, and I'm not going to get hyped up over him until we really see. I mean, it's not, I don't think he's playing like a LeBron. He's a 9 PER, so it's all calmed down a bit. And this is, I'm saying this without having watched a second of him playing, so
that's okay. Fine. Yeah, I mean, I'm not comparing him to LeBron. I'm not saying the Slovenian LeBron was obviously a joke, but just clear. Second game, 8 of 16 from the field, 4 of 9 from 3, 26 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 block, 2 steals.
He also had 6 turnovers versus 3 assists. Sure, but like Minnesota team, it's terrible.
Okay, but that's like a crazy stat line for, I don't know. I mean, I'm shocked in general by how well.
I mean,
like,
I feel like all these rookies are playing.
That was
really well for the most part.
That was going to be my point.
Your boy,
yeah.
Trae Young. I mean, I don't think what Doncic is doing is outlandish compared to his peers.
Well,
if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, if you gave me a set, that was going to be my follow-up point. And I'm wondering if I'm wondering what that phenomenon is. Like, I thought coming into this, like, this was just an absurdly good draft class, and very similar to, I can't remember if it was 2016, 2017. It was one of the last few years. It was 2017, I think, that was also really, really good. I think the last 2 years of draft classes have just been amazingly deep. But I'm wondering if it's the pace or if these guys are just more ready to play in the NBA or the defenses aren't quite as good as they were. But it seems like everyone is excelling. Like, even someone like Jaren Jackson, who I was very high on, but just seemed so raw and felt like he'd have an adjustment period. He had 24-7 in like his second game. Like, I'm surprised that these guys are so good already.
I think it's a couple reasons. One, these guys, as soon as they declare for the draft, instead of just like chilling and planning on what they're going to buy their mom and their brother, they're just in these academies training nonstop for the combine, getting their body ready. And also, there's so many more opportunities for these top guys to play with NBA stars in the offseason at these local gyms, Lifetime Fitness in the city. Shout out to one of my colleagues who goes there, and they know who they are. These guys can get run with NBA players like Melo and Kristaps Porzingis. So it really does help them acclimate to the game. And also going back to when we think about guys like Kwame Brown, who I feel like didn't have the resources at hand when he came into the league. Now all these teams have so many people on their staff just designed to help rookies acclimate to life in the NBA. So that lessens the learning curve there, and I think it just helps them focus on basketball. So, and I think that's why we're seeing these guys have a ton of success coming into the league early on.
Yeah, I think it's that, and I think there are some genuinely special talents. I had in order coming into the NBA draft, Doncic, Ayton, and Trae Young as my top three guys, and they all look like they could be really special, and there's guys up and down the draft, like even someone like our own Rodion Skurutz, who had some of the least expectations of any incoming rookie, and he's been very, very solid so far. All right, last one, Josh. Toronto versus Boston. This is a little bit of a surprise to me because I thought Boston, with the continuity they had coming back from last year, and maybe I overrated that because obviously Hayward didn't play all of last year. Kyrie kind of missed Jason Tatum's star turn at the end of the season, but I thought the continuity for Boston would really make them dominant to start the season and Toronto would have some issues, but it's been the opposite. Toronto, along with Denver, has been the best team in basketball so far. I mean, they're the one team in the league that can match Denver's depth. It doesn't seem like there's a weak point in that rotation, and there's so much versatility, and having guys like Danny Green and Serge Ibaka playing really, really well, and it was a little unexpected to me, but it just means they're legitimately 10 deep with not even solid NBA players. They're 10 deep with good NBA players, and that's just crazy, while Boston has had a lot of struggles so far.
Yeah, I think really what it comes down to is that Toronto basically is the same team as last year, except you're replacing DeMar DeRozan with Kawhi Leonard, which is an upgrade. Boston has obviously Gordon Hayward coming in, and that's really going to throw things off because you're having another all-star caliber player coming into the mix, and now everyone's role is going to shift. And also, I didn't realize that Greg Monroe signed with Toronto. When did that happen?
It was this offseason. He's a double agent. He's giving Boston intel. I know it's a tough one. All right, I'm 100% with you on that. Also, Kyrie hasn't been shooting that well. He shot pretty well tonight in a loss to the Magic somehow. I'm sure it's all going to come together for Boston. Obviously, Brad Stevens is a really good coach. I will just say, like, I was of the opinion Toronto was going to be really, really good. I thought Boston was a clear favorite. Now that's – I know, again, overreaction, but that's a total toss of my mind. I'm just so impressed with all the weapons Toronto has. And I think in terms of build, Toronto, like, might – if Kyle Lowry can keep up a really high level of play, they might be the team best built to compete with Golden State in the whole league.
Yeah, and Boston got owned by Johnny Isaac tonight, so not a great sign.
Tough look for our guy. All right, I said it would be short. It's going to be over 30 minutes once I put the ads in. I'm sorry for that, but I appreciate you tuning in with us. I want to do this like once a week, just go around the league, refresh, get into it. We're going to be back probably Thursday morning for you guys, but stay tuned. It'll be this week. We'll see you soon.